We get flown over, driven through, dismissed, and mocked. But the history of this region is rich and important. This hour, we'll talk about the history of the Midwest and why it matters. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. As the Midwest was settled, the United States was taking shape. Today, we'll talk about how the history of this region plays a pivotal and often ignored role in the history of our nation. With me, John Locke, author of The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History, and Leo Landis, Iowa historian and museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We live in the American heartland, but the importance of this region is often overlooked, and that is not a new phenomenon. This hour, we'll talk about the history of the Prairie Midwest and why it's important. With me today is John Locke. He's author of a new book called The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History. Hello, John.
Good morning, Charity. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And also, Leo Landis is with us. He's an Iowa historian, a Midwestern historian, and a museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa. Hello, Leo.
Good morning, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And John, I, in my professional life, spend a lot of time thinking about Iowa history, reading about Iowa history, talking about Iowa history and Midwestern history as well. Of course, Leo does as well. But in your book, you write about a history that is not just ignored, but really understudied. Make your case. What's missing?
Well, first of all, good morning, Leo. I think we ran into each other a few months ago in Wisconsin, and we had a good discussion about the state of Midwestern history, so it's good to connect with you again. Yes, thanks for the opportunity, Charity. I thought about this book several years ago. It's evolved, I guess, since the mid-1990s, actually, when I was living in Iowa City, and I was working on a dissertation there at the University of Iowa. And I tackled a topic that related to the Midwest, but it began to dawn on me fairly early on that in comparison to other fields of study, the Midwest really does not have a very strong historiography. There is not a organized field of Midwestern studies. There's no journal of Midwestern history. There's no organized way to go about studying the region, unlike, say, the American South, which has the Journal of Southern History, the American West, which, of course, has the Western Historical Quarterly and is a very lively field. And, of course, you know, New England and the Northeast, they have dozens of history journals and lots of major institutions that study that area of the country in great detail. But the Midwest falls through the cracks. Now, one thing that I discovered when I began to dig into this a little bit is that this was not always the case. In fact, prior to World War II, there was a very robust field of study that took the Midwest very seriously, including historians at the University of Iowa in Iowa City. People, some of your listeners may remember some of these names like Benjamin Shambaugh and Louis Pelzer. They were very active, and they put the University of Iowa in the middle of this organized effort to study the Midwest. But after their passing, after they faded from the scene, the field really began to fall apart. And the Midwestern journal that used to exist that studied the region, which was called the Mississippi Valley Historical Review, changed its mission in the 1960s. It became a national journal. And all these early roots in the Midwest that the journal had and its early mission and focus on the Midwest was abandoned. And I think we are now seeing the long-term consequences of that abandonment in terms of the really paltry attention given to our region in comparison to other regions.
And when you say paltry attention given to the region, in what ways do you think that there's a lack? I mean, clearly we talk about being flyover country and we talk about being ignored culturally in many ways. But where do you see problems because of that?
Well, I think we could all take some lessons from the Midwest and places like Iowa in terms of its pragmatism and decency and common sense approach to things. But unfortunately, those kinds of attributes are not, they don't drive our culture. Most of our culture comes from Hollywood and New York. And, you know, that's, I think there are consequences to that. And, you know, we always have these conversations in politics about polarization and people don't get along. I think that's driven in part by the fact that places like the Midwest have kind of dropped out of the national conversation. And therefore, the national conversation is driven by people in New York and Hollywood and people who yell a lot on the radio. Not you, Charity, of course. I mean, this is a great, reasonable discussion. But so I think there are some cultural and social and political costs to not paying attention to the Midwest. But let's face it, we all know that a lot of the things that happen in the Midwest are fairly, for lack of a better word, calm and humdrum. And that does not make news. And that does not make for a good tweet. That does not make for funny jokes on the Daily Show. And in order to get attention in this cultural atmosphere, it helps to do kind of outlandish and crazy things. And those are attributes which luckily I don't think are widely attributed to the Midwest. So it just doesn't get much attention. And this is true, I think, I noticed this in academia, and it helps to have a sexy topic to get attention to your book or to your article or to your line of research. And when you don't have that level of excitement or that kind of exotic approach to a particular issue, you tend to get overlooked. And I think that's unfortunate because it means places like the Midwest and its history and its small towns and its farms and its good people kind of get overlooked. And we need to do more to focus on this history. I think it would be good for us all.
Well, and John, before we start digging into the history, you, in your book, you focus specifically on what you're calling the Prairie Midwest. Why make that distinction?
Well, I say in the book that I tend to focus on where the Midwest opens up into the prairie region. That would mean Western Ohio, Central Indiana, Central Illinois. Of course, all of Iowa is basically prairie. And this generally refers to the small town agrarian aspects of the American Midwest. Now, of course, there is another aspect of the Midwest. It is also an industrial heartland, or at least it was up until the 1970s before deindustrialization set in and has had so many painful consequences in places like Detroit. And of course, there is that northern tier, northern Minnesota, northern Michigan, which is much more forested, focused on the Great Lakes, focused on industry and shipping, et cetera. So the book is less about that part of the Midwest and more about the prairie area of the Midwest, which basically includes all of Iowa.
Well, and Leo, of course, you devote your career to digging into Iowa history right now. When you listen to John talking about there being a lack of historical record, do you feel that?
I think there's a little bit of truth in what John's saying. I think where it's been picked up when the Mississippi Valley Historical Review was made into the Journal of American History, that the state historical agencies really picked up some of that mantle. And so you get some great journals from state historical societies, whether it be Wisconsin or Minnesota, Ohio and Indiana and Iowa. So it's not that it's not getting the attention. It's that it's in state journals is where I see that happening. And there's some really great work that gets published, as John knows. His work gets published in Annals of Iowa, done by the State Historical Society of Iowa. So we've got some really great state journals, just not a cohesive Midwestern journal like John mentioned in the other regions.
Well, let's dig into the history, and then we'll talk a little bit more as we go on about our Midwestern identity and maybe a lack of regionalism that we seem to have in this part of the country. But let's go back to when this part of the Midwest, the Prairie Midwest, was really being opened up for settlement. John, you write about the stakes being very high for the entire nation at that point. Why were the stakes so high?
Let me just... First of all, echo what Leo said. It's very important to note that most of the states in the Midwest have active state historical societies, which have very impressive journals of state history. What I'm making the point about is that there isn't a regional approach to these things. So often when writings take place, they focus on, say, the state of Iowa, as opposed to whatever the phenomena being studied is, how that fits into a regional pattern of events. And that's what kind of sets the Midwest apart from, say, the South or the West or New England, which has a stronger regional consciousness. But yes, I completely agree with Leo, and you can't find a better journal than the Annals of Iowa, run over in Iowa City. And anybody who's interested in paying attention to the Midwest and its history should be reading the Annals of Iowa. But yes, back to your point about the importance of the Midwest as a region in terms of our overall history and some of the things we forget. And this I lay out in chapter one in the book entitled Why the Midwest Matters. And I should say that this chapter came about because I was giving a book talk in Fargo, North Dakota, one time about my last book, which was A History of Dakota Territory. And a fellow in the back of the room stood up and said, hey, this is really interesting and all, but there's a million books in this store. Why should I read your book? Why does all this matter? Who cares? Can you boil it down for me in a couple of minutes? Which I thought that's fair enough. I should boil this down. So I put first in this.
And you know what?
Book.
We're going to have to boil it down in just a moment. We have to take a short break. We'll be back to this conversation in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about the history of the Prairie Midwest and why it matters, and why it matters to people who don't happen to live here in the Midwest. I'm talking with John Locke, who is the author of a new book called The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History. Leo Landis is also with us today. He's an Iowa historian and museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa, and you're welcome to join our conversation as well. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also give us a call at 866-780-9100. Why do you think the history of the Midwest matters to the rest of the nation, and why do you think it tends to be ignored? This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Midwestern history and what makes it important to the rest of the nation. With me today is John Locke. He's author of the new book, The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History. Leo Landis is also here. He's an Iowa historian, a museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa. And John, we had to take a break, but let me get back to the question that I asked you a few minutes ago. When the Prairie Midwest that you're focusing on in your book was opened up to settlement, there was a lot at stake for our very young nation. What was at stake, and why was it so important?
Yes, Charity, I think a couple of things we should definitely highlight, and we forget this in the traditional narrative about American history, but the American Revolution was in many ways sparked in the backcountry, the colonial backcountry, which we call the Midwest these days. So that set in motion the train of events that led to the Revolution and to the American acquisition of the Midwest. And this was a essential essential ingredient of the success of the early American Republic, because it gave the settlers an outlet, a place to go settle, to create small towns and farms, and it gave the United States a breadbasket. It ultimately gave the United States an industrial heartland, and it also tipped the balance in major events such as the Civil War. I mean, if the war had been fought largely between New England and the South, it's possible the South would have won the war, and then the course of American history would have been completely different. But luckily for the North, they had all that industrial strength and all the population from Ohio and Indiana and Illinois and Iowa. You know, places like Iowa sent many regiments to fight in the Civil War and sacrificed a lot of people to win the Civil War and tip the scales in favor of the North and preserve the Union. This is something that we kind of lose track of in the traditional Civil War narrative. The other thing that happened out in the Midwest was it allowed the United States to perfect its democratic ideals. Even though the revolution had taken place, there still was a lot of anti-democratic structures in the early American nation, and there still was a lot of aristocracy, and it's still a lot of privilege, and still a lot of inequality, especially in places like the South. But in the Midwest, people were pretty everyone was treated largely the same. Everyone could vote. Institutions developed on a very democratic basis, and this became the norm in American history. And it was not the, you know, and so these eastern tidewater areas and the New York areas, which were, you know, much more backward in terms of democracy, they didn't set the norm for the new nation. So all of these are critical aspects of Midwestern history that changed the nation.
Well, and Leo, I want you to weigh in on this as well. As settlers moved into the Midwest, they were a long way from the seats of power way back east, and things could have gone very differently, couldn't they?
They certainly could. I think the point that John makes about the people coming to the Midwest is critically important to recall. It's the people coming here had a sense of optimism that they could make themselves a better life. And the reason they stuck around is because they were succeeding then. If you weren't making a better life, you didn't succeed. And so you stayed with that idea. And so the political and class issues that you get in larger communities aren't as present, I think, in the Midwest that John's alluding to. Now, granted, if you're a Catholic and an Irish Catholic, you might be running into some problems. Or if you're an African American, you might be running into some problems in the Midwest. You know, the Klan's very active in the 1920s in Iowa and Illinois and other regions, and they're not always the most friendly organization. But for the most part, our governments are free of corruption, both on the state and local level. And so people feel like they get a fair shake and that hard work pays off in the Midwest.
Well, and of course, you know, we, most of us grow up reading about Pa and Ma and Laura and Carrie and Mary. Don't forget Mary, as they, you know, traveled across Iowa and South Dakota and in the prairie Midwest. I mean, there's certainly a history in this region that captures our romantic imagination. But it strikes me that when people think about settling the frontier, and this was the Wild West at one point, when people think about settling the frontier, they look further west. That seems to be the part of the migration that has captured our imagination in a bigger way. Do you think that's true, Leo?
I think what the majesty of the far west, the mountain west, captures your geographic kind of perspective and makes you think that, wow, how beautiful. But when you think about what was the first West, as John's talking about, in the old Northwest and what is the Louisiana Purchase, you see places like Living History Farms here in Iowa that celebrate that pioneer period, or places like Connor Prairie in Indiana, or a lot of great outdoor museums like that, even to some degree, Greenfield Village in Michigan, that celebrate, and that's maybe a really good example, is how Henry Ford thought the Midwest contributed to our nation's greatness. And he takes McGuffey's, what he thinks is McGuffey's boyhood home from Pennsylvania and moves to the Midwest, because that's part of the MacGuffinism that, you know, if you do things right and you follow the rules, you're going to be rewarded. And I think that's the part of our kind of popular culture today that we sometimes forget, but is manifested in the museums across the region too, and so celebrate some of that culture.
I mean, we're talking this hour about Midwestern history, how it's been overlooked, what makes it important, not just to us, but to the entire nation. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today is Leo Landis, Iowa historian and museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa, and John Locke, who's the author of the new book, The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History. And John, I think you have something you wanted to add to what Leo was saying.
Well, I was just going to add one thing. Everything Leo says is completely correct. And I would just add one bit of nuance. He mentioned how, some groups in the Midwest may not have thought it was such a great place. He mentioned African Americans. But I would actually argue that the Midwest was quite exceptional in its treatment of African Americans in comparison to other regions. Of course, blacks flocked to the Midwest. And if we're talking about Iowa, for example, Iowa was one of the first states to pass far-reaching civil rights laws back in the 19th century, requiring that everyone be treated equal. And this predates the overall civil rights revolution by 60 or 70 years. And Iowa has always been very progressive in terms of racial equality. And I think, if I'm remembering right, the University of Iowa was the first to integrate its sports teams and to have black athletes play for the Hawkeyes. And so the Midwest is different. It's unique. It is exceptional. And this sense of its uniqueness and how it led, in many cases, progressive change in the United States, I think we need to pay more attention to that.
I want to get to the phones. There are a number of people who want to join our conversation today. Ralph is on the line in Guernsey. Hi, Ralph.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Hello.
Can you hear us, Ralph?
Can't hear you.
All right. Well, we'll get back to Ralph in a few minutes. But Ralph wanted to talk a little bit about natural history in this part of the nation. And we have this email from Cindy in Ames on a similar topic. One reason the history of the Prairie Midwest is important is because it shows that an entire natural landscape can be obliterated when there's no serious effort at protection. The tall grass prairie was so plowed under that it is far more endangered than the rainforest of Central and South America. In Iowa, only 0.03% of the original prairie is left. That is a staggering loss. And the natural history of this part of the nation, well, it doesn't get any respect now as a place to come and visit the great outdoors. But that history has been overlooked as well, John.
Well, of course, places like Iowa, it's very rich farmland, so people moved in there and plowed up the land and began farming, and we all benefit from that every time we go to the grocery store. I understand the caller's point, of course, and there have been efforts to preserve some tall grass prairie, but I mean, in the 19th century, most of the people that came to places like Iowa were farmers, so one would expect them to begin plowing and to make their living as farmers. Now, as far as the broader Midwest goes, there's a tremendous amount of natural diversity and Upper Peninsula of Michigan, of course, and, you know, the beauty of the Great Lakes and you know, the driftless area of Wisconsin. So there's still a lot of natural beauty to be enjoyed in the Midwest, I would say.
Well, and Ralph wanted to weigh in, the caller who we couldn't get on the air. He wanted to weigh in on the loss of wildlife in Iowa, and that's something we talk about monthly here on Talk of Iowa. So many of the stories about the species that live in Iowa today, and many of them have made amazing comebacks, but so many of the stories are that these different species were hunted to extinction in this part of the country. So there is a really fascinating natural history there. And Leo, that's something that you encounter in your work.
It certainly is. And as you know, we think about native species and invasive species. Sometimes they're celebrated. Sometimes they're derided. The stories of the Asian carp coming in and the silver carp coming into the Great Lakes region is certainly a big one. Or emerald ash borers coming into Iowa soon, which Michigan has dealt with. Mm-hmm. But you have things, too, like Chinese ring-necked pheasants, which at least as Midwesterners, we're all pretty fond of. Iowa's not quite as great with those things. But there's always, as John is pointing out, trade-offs on changing a landscape or introducing species. So we may have lost some prairie chickens, but we've got Chinese ring-necked pheasants, and that's good and bad both ways.
I would add, too, that, there's nothing exceptional about the Midwest on this whole issue. I mean, various places, including New England and the West, et cetera, has experienced this whole issue of, the loss of various species. But one thing I would add is that the Midwest was probably one of the leading areas in terms of the beginnings of conservation and attempts to make sure we preserve some of these places and some of these species. I'm pretty sure Aldo Leopold was from Iowa.
He was.
And I don't think there's probably anybody who was a bigger leader in terms of conservation than Leopold, and there's been a bunch of successors to Leopold. So I don't think the Midwest should take any blame for, species disappearing, at least any more blame than any other region.
Let's go back to the phones. Dean is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Dean.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, my children went to school, middle school in South Carolina, and I was surprised when they brought home a book, The History of South Carolina. Here they were teaching the history of South Carolina and a whole semester of it. And I got the book, read it, and I was amazed about what those kids were learning about South Carolina all the way from pre-revolution right up to the present almost. And I just thought, well, I went to school in Iowa. I didn't know anything about Iowa, basically. And I thought that was kind of a shame that our Iowa kids don't know anything about our state, really.
Well, okay. And Dean, where did you go to school and when?
I went to school at Dubuque Senior, but my children went to school in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
All right. Well, I have to say I have very fond, memories of my fifth grade Iowa history lessons, although Iowa does have such a rich history, and it feels like we should be teaching more of it. Leo?
And that's where I think there's a resurrection, too. Certainly the state is really trying to promote that fifth grade and sixth grade middle school study of Iowa history again that so many of us, at least in the 70s and 80s, grew up with. And learning the rivers, I know my son, who's in fifth grade here in Des Moines, he had to learn the rivers and is studying Iowa history this year, and they'll take field trips to learn Iowa history. And that with things like National History Day getting more importance, you can always pick an Iowa history topic. So there are great opportunities both in the classroom and the promotion of Iowa history, the Des Moines Area Community College and some other initiatives to promote Iowa history are out there. Simpson has a great program. So I think the state's really recognizing that, and there's some organizations doing good work.
Well, and there was a new edition just a couple of years ago of a wonderful textbook, Iowa Past to Present. It's out in its third edition. The People in the Prairie and Dorothy Schweder, Thomas Moraine, Lynn Nielsen all contributed to that. So we do have some just fabulous resources for that as well. John, you wanted to weigh in.
Charity, I was just going to say that everything that you and Leo have said is true, and I think there's much to point to, and I hope that this movement takes off. But I would say this, and I think this is important, and maybe as an outsider I can say this with a little more openly, but I think you need more leadership from places like the University of Iowa. In the past, and this is what I discuss in the book, prominent professors at the University of Iowa, such as Benjamin Shambaugh and Louis Pelzer, they provided a tremendous amount of leadership and energy and direction to the study the serious study, the scholarly study of Iowa history and Midwestern history. That's just not done anymore. At the University of Iowa, there is no permanent faculty member, no tenured faculty member who teaches Iowa history, who's an expert on Iowa history, who gives it any energy. So all those graduate students that go to the University of Iowa and who may think in the back of their mind, yeah, I'd like to do a dissertation and future book on Iowa history, they have no one to work with. And your caller mentioned this history of South Carolina. This is a very good point to make. There's a major difference in the regional consciousness between Southerners and Midwesterners. At the University of Georgia, for example, there are 10 people who teach Southern history. But at the University of Iowa, there's zero people who teach Midwestern history or Iowa history. Now, that's a problem. And, you know, that's something that needs to be addressed by, you know, leaders in Iowa. They need to lean on places like the University of Iowa to beef up their instruction in this area. Because, let's face it, that's where a lot of future leaders go. That's where they're trained. That's where they learn their history. And unless the lessons come from the top down at places like the University of Iowa, it's not going to sink in. So I think Iowans should pay more attention to what their flagship university is doing in terms of Midwestern history.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with John Locke, author of The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History, and historian Leo Landis. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the importance of Midwestern history and why it has been understudied and is so often overlooked. With me today is John Locke. He's the author of a new book from University of Iowa Press called The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History. Also with me is Leo Landis, Iowa historian and museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa. And just before the break, John, you were introducing the idea of our regional identity in the Midwest and how it doesn't seem to be as strong an identity as the other regions in the United States, for example, the South and New England, et cetera. And Leo, that's something you've given a lot of thought to as well. You feel that here in the Midwest, we tend to identify more with our state than with our region?
I think there's a lot of truth in that. And that goes back to a little bit of what John referenced, where our state journals are the stronger academic presses, and so it gets expressed that way. But when you ask a Midwesterner where they're from, they'll usually say their state first, or at least that's my experience. And you can identify Midwesterners by the way we talk, which I know was a rebrock that you had last week.
Right.
But that's one of those issues where we think of ourselves as Iowans or Hoosiers or Buckeyes or Michiganders or somebody from Illinois first, and then start looking at ourselves and what's distinct about the Midwest. And some of that, I think, goes back to the fact that the New England states, the Mid-Atlantic states, they're the original part of the original 13 colonies. So they get that kind of snobbish, we got this place started. And that goes for parts of the American South too. So they get a lot of attention. The South has its regional distinctiveness, and that gets a lot of attention. And then you look to the West and the majestic landscapes, the West, and just geographically is somewhat sexy. I think to a degree some of those borderlands of Arizona and New Mexico also don't get the attention or may feel some of the same insecurities, if you want to use it, about being overlooked. And as Midwesterners, I really do agree with some of what John's saying, but you do have some good work coming out. I mean, even in 2007 there was the American Midwest book done as a interpretive encyclopedia, essentially. And granted, there had been the Journal of Southern Culture, Encyclopedia of Southern Culture done in the 90s. But we've at least got our own encyclopedia done by Indiana University Press. So those are some work that goes back. Or even William Cronin in the 1990s with Nature's Metropolis is a great example of some good academic work on Midwestern history.
Well, and John, are you a South Dakotan first and a Midwesterner second?
Well, I've never really thought of it that way, but yeah, I guess I primarily identify myself first as a South Dakotan. I mean, yeah, but I think that's true of Southerners too. I mean, they don't say usually I'm a Southerner. They usually say I'm from Alabama or something like that. But But what Leo is saying is true. I mean, there have been important works, and I do not want to give short shrift to those works. But unfortunately, after that encyclopedia came out about the Midwest, basically the Indiana University Press series on the Midwest petered out. And that was kind of the end of the line. And unfortunately, that had to do with some changes in editors, et cetera. So that's really not going. But I should say, and we should definitely highlight this, that the University of Iowa Press in Iowa City has started a new series in the last year or so, trying to get people to focus a little bit more about on the Midwest as a region. And my book is a part of that series, and I know they have some others planned. So there's some important leadership coming from the University of Iowa Press. So we need to recognize that. But that is, I think, an individual example of success, but there are a lot of other examples out there of journals who did work on the Midwest or historians who used to work on the Midwest that have kind of faded from the scene. So overall, the trend is in the wrong direction. But if we can keep the conversation going and spread the word and get more people working on projects like this, I think we can turn things around.
I want to get back to the phones. Connie's on the line from Mount Pleasant. Hi, Connie.
Hi. How are you this morning?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
I'd like to comment on regarding the other races and ethnic groups in Iowa. Having grown up mostly in Iowa, but also have lived in other states, including California, I've noticed that while we may have been forward in passing laws and voting and so forth with other ethnic groups, I have found personally in the smaller communities that townspeople are not as accepting. They're very suspicious. They're very unwilling to accept some of those of other races, and it becomes very frustrating for me, having colleagues and friends, that when I go into a community hardware store or clothing store, and I'm being followed as well as my friends. And so we haven't done as good of a job in recent years in that case, I don't believe.
Well, Connie, thank you so much for bringing that up. And, you know, Leo, I know that you have thought about this as well. We do tend to pat ourselves on the back for being progressive, and particularly in Iowa, we like to talk about our progressive history in this state. And, John, you brought up the laws that have been passed in Iowa history. But we have some major failings in that category as well, Leo.
Well, as we discussed earlier, the Klan was very active in Iowa, but I think when we're at our best, and John nailed some things that I just really firmly believe about Midwesterners, I think we're decent, I think we're hospitable, I think we're genuine, and those are things, but we're also like the rest of America, and we have our failings, whether it be the Klan in the 20s or segregation across the Midwest in different ways, or even with some of the issues that recent immigrant groups like the Latino communities across the Midwest and meatpacking towns have faced, or some of the challenges in those communities. And yet we're a place where, at least in Iowa, where you've got Ling Chau in West Des Moines producing Olympic gymnasts, Olympic gold medal winning gymnasts like Sean Johnson from Iowa and Gabby Douglas, who came from Virginia to come to Iowa to train here. So we still carry on, I think, those traditions of decency and welcoming and hospitality that John referenced earlier.
Well, Connie, thank you so much for your call. And John, you want to respond to that too?
Well, I was just going to say one thing that Connie might be interested in is that several years ago there was a man who grew up in Ames, Iowa, I think, and he wrote a book entitled Bright Radical Star. And the book was about the passage of all these anti-discrimination laws in Iowa in the late 19th century and the extent to which Iowans welcomed blacks from the American South, which, of course, many blacks wanted to get out of the South as quickly as possible because of the lingering effects of the Civil War and Jim Crow, et cetera. The term or the title of the book, Bright Radical Star, referred to General Grant's description of Iowa's role in the Civil War. He said the Iowa regiments were always there and strong and fought very well. Iowa was my bright radical star during the war. So that may give Connie a little bit different perspective or a little bit more history on this whole question, and I would encourage her to take a look at it. It might be interesting to her.
Although it might be cold comfort if she feels that looking different causes suspicion in a small town in Iowa to look at history in that category. Let's get back to the phones. Hal is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Hal.
Hi. I'm enjoying the conversation of historians Locke and Landis. Sounds like a law firm. When I was young, like 8 years old, I remember seeing Harry Truman come through Cedar Rapids on the train and speaking from the observation car by Green Square. Union Station used to be a historical landmark in Cedar Rapids. It was demolished in 1961 to make way for a parking ramp. But had it remained there, it would be a narrative from the past, and it would remind us of past events. But what I want to talk about now is our narratives into the future with the rest of the world and how Iowa contributes to this. And history should be written about these things. And, for example, the World Food Prize in Des Moines, the Center for Human Rights and the Writers' Workshop in Iowa City. All the international students had come to Grinnell and Coe and other good colleges in Iowa from all over the world. Our international exporters like Collins, Vermeer, Deere, Mittermaier, the refugee programs we have to bring people from war-torn countries to Iowa and give them new homes. And finally, a group that I'm a member of here in Cedar Rapids, our United Nations group, Amnesty International. We connect with the rest of the world. I think Iowa is a premier state in providing these things to our citizens here, and it's something that should be written about. It's in the here and now, and it's important.
Hal, thank you so much for your comment. And John, that's what you were talking about earlier, the fact that things that are happening in the Prairie Midwest today tend to be overlooked because of this lack of understanding of the region.
Yes, and I appreciate Hal's comments. There's a lot of very generous, decent people in Iowa and the Midwest, and they don't get enough attention. And I have a lot more experience with what Hal is describing than what Connie was describing, not to take seriously what Connie is describing, but I don't think that is the common experience of most people in the region. And unfortunately, that view, the one that Connie describes, is the one that sort of sinks in on the coasts. I went recently to this movie, Nebraska, which some of you may have seen, which I thought was kind of dark and unfortunate and kind of a sad tale. But it was a very popular film in New York and Hollywood and at the Cannes Film Festival. And unfortunately, that kind of reveals what a lot of people think about the center of the country, the interior of the country. But that's not the case, as Hal makes very clear. There's a whole different side to the region.
Sandra is on the line now in Fort Dodge. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you about a book that will be published this spring. It's called The Anthology of Prairie Literature, and it's an extensive review of prairie literature by Dr. John Price, who's been on your program many times.
Mm-hmm.
And at the University of Iowa will be producing this in the spring, and it may be of interest to a lot of people because it's an excellent review.
All right, Sandra, thanks a lot for mentioning it. It's certainly already on our radar around here. And we've had some suggestions from other people of books that they feel are really valuable in this area. Matt from Ames suggests 60 Miles from Contentment, Traveling the 19th Century American Interior by M.H. Dunlop. He says the book is about when the Midwest was the West, and he found it thoroughly enlightening about the history of our region. We also heard from Anne in Cedar Rapids, who wants to make sure we don't overlook the books of Bess Streeter Aldrich, who, of course, is from Cedar Falls, or was from Cedar Falls, and wrote historical fiction about the state as well. And we have this from Matt Names. He says, Cahokia Mound State Park near St. Louis is one of the most fascinating and little-known elements from Midwestern history. And he says, Cahokia's population at its peak was in the 1200s, was among the largest cities in the world, and its ancient population would not be surpassed by any city in the United States until the late 18th century. And you write about that in your book, John, as well, how one of the places where we have fallen down in our history of the Midwest is the Native American or American Indian contribution to this region and to the nation. This was something that was overlooked in the early writing of our history.
Well, what I think I need to clarify this a little bit. What I say in the book is that these early historians of the Midwest, even though people think these days that they didn't pay any attention to Native American history, the truth is they paid a tremendous amount of attention to Native American history. This is not some new revelation in the last couple of decades. Historians tend to write in a very present tense, like, oh, we've discovered this. This has never been written before. But my trip through the annals of Midwestern history in the early 20th century indicates that this was written about a great deal. And so there's much to be learned from these early historians. One thing I wanted to add to what Matt said in Cedar Rapids, I think it was, is a book that I ran across about 15, 20 years ago. It's called Kinship with the Land. I think it was written by a man from Iowa who moved away and was away from Iowa for many years. But it was about the old effort in Iowa City to develop some regionalist writers. And so people like Ruth Succo and John Frederick, who launched a journal in Iowa City called The Midland in 1915. And they specifically did this so that there was a place for writing about the region. And so everyone didn't have to run off to New York or Paris to get close to the publishing world. And so that book reveals another side of Iowa history that doesn't get much attention to, which it should these days.
Well, we are nearly out of time. John, I'm going to let you have the last word. As you are writing about what you're hoping will be a revival of Midwestern history, do you find yourself feeling hopeful?
I do. I think there's quite a bit of interest. I think people, when they give it a second thought, they begin to think, you know, I think we would all be better off if we knew a little bit more about our region, our place, our roots, if we had a better context about what's going on around us. And so the reception to the book has been very strong, and I hope it continues, and I hope people keep thinking about, especially Midwesterners, keep thinking about their history.
Well, John, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, Charity.
John Locke is the author of the new book, The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History. And Leo Landis, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And we will have many, many more conversations about Iowa history in the future, I'm sure. So we'll do our part. Okay, Leo?
Thank you.
All right. Leo Landis is an Iowa historian and museum curator at the State Historical Museum of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And we had technical support today from John Pemble. With me in the studio now is Ben Kiefer, and he's host of River to River coming up today at noon. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Charity. Coming up at noon today, it's Politics Wednesday, and we're going to be looking at places in the world we should be watching for changes in U.S. foreign policy in the coming year as we move through 2014. Our guests, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University. Also, we haven't heard from Lindsay Kahn for a long time. She's on leave from the University of Northern Iowa. She's a Council on Foreign Relations International Affairs Fellow. So we'll hear from her. We'll touch on a lot of hot spots around the world that concern us when it comes to U.S. foreign policy.
All right. And I was just looking on Facebook and saw a picture of you bicycle commuting in sub-zero temperatures. You're looking for winter stories as well on Facebook, right?
That's coming up on Friday, News Buzz, right?
All right. This is Talk of Iowa.